You know our slogan around here is better practice, better life. But we're taking this belief to the next level. And we've recently announced the creation of a new association. It's called the Best Practices Association. Our association celebrates the mindset that is better practice, better life. This mindset celebrates time, healthy living, personal growth, clinical excellence, and impacting the lives of your patients and your team through intentional leadership. In fact, we are the work-life balance experts in dentistry. The BPA will coach independent dental practices like yours to thrive by sharing best practices and operational habits, behaviors, systems, tools, and insight that lead to profitability and sustained growth, and you can still have a life. So if you're a dentist that wants to surround yourself with great thinkers, let us help you create your own version of better practice, better life. Go to actdental.com/BPA or hit the link in the show notes.
Hey folks, this is Brian Gray, and you're watching the Best Practices Show.
Hey guys, thanks for watching the Best Practice Show, where we take a look at the best business practices from the best dental practices all over the world. And if you're going to grow a dental practice, you're going to learn a lot of lessons. But one of the lessons you're going to learn, which is one of the most profound, is that time is the new rich. And this is my favorite topic of all time. And I got one of my favorite people who's the perfect example to talk about this, Dr. Brian Gray, one of the most amazing human beings, one of my favorite people, a great friend, mentor from Washington, D.C. You do not want to miss this. So do me a favor, grab a pen and hit the share button. You're going to love this. Now, a couple show notes. We are shooting this live on Facebook. So as you're watching it, if you're just pondering these thoughts or you're listening to Brian talk or thoughts, add them to the feed and I'll dish them to Brian while we're talking to him and I'll get the answers straight from him. Or if you're watching this later on, go ahead and add questions to the feed and you'll see, we'll do our best to get back to you so you get the most out of this. Keep sending us suggestions for shows. Again, I am just crazy grateful. We got a ton here. Over 39,000 followers on Facebook and over 150,000 of you have visited us on iTunes. All I can say is just thank you. I just appreciate everything. Now, my guest today, one of my favorite people, and I actually, I don't know, was it 15 years ago I met you? I don't know when it was. You were kind of intimidating when I first met you. Like, you're a big shot from Washington, D.C. You got this amazing practice. You have a great partner, awesome things, and you were just taken over. You'd just taken over. You moved from La Plata to Washington, D.C., and now, like, I remember, like, you had dignitaries coming to your practice, and I was like, this is crazy. Like, there were, like, big shots in there, and one of the things that I've always learned from you is valuable lessons like the email lesson, which we're going to talk about here in a second. And then of all the accolades that you ever had in your practice, you've had an amazing career in teaching dentistry, building a practice. You would bring me in your office, you go, you know, all of these, you know, my favorite things are this one. And it would be like a huge frame picture of your daughter in soccer championships. And then you'd go, I don't know anything about soccer, but we coached her to a city championship. I'm like, this is a guy who's got it all together. So today I want to unravel this and learn some secrets from the master. So if you're a young dentist watching this, you got to watch this. You got to listen because this guy, he's the man. Now, I know who you are. Other people that have seen you on the lecture circuit know who you are. But who's Dr. Brian Gray? Give us a little background on who we're talking to today.
First off, thank you. I'm honored to be here, Kirk, and have a chance to chat with you. Yeah, I value all the time we get to spend together, which is fleeting these days because we're all so busy. I guess a short biography of my life is I grew up in the Midwest outside Chicago. I'm a White Sox fan, just to set that straight right off the bat. I played football in grade school and wanted to impress my coach, who was a science teacher, and that was it. So I did well in science, got to high school. They said, you do well in science, so we're going to put you in advanced courses. I didn't know any better. And And then I, when I was a senior in high school, I was like, I should do something with this. So I just interviewed the vets and the physicians and the dentist in town. And I ruled out the vets right away because I saw a guy reach up and pull a cow out. And I was like, I ain't doing that. The physicians were all busy. They all were just too busy to just spend time letting me shadow. And they didn't call it shadowing back then or interviewing. But every single dentist was like, yeah, Brian, man, let's go sailing. Or hey, let's meet on the golf course. Or you know how to play tennis? Let's play tennis. Or, you know, whatever it was something surrounding fun and happiness. And I just thought to myself, gosh, that's what I want. You know, I think I want to do that. So I went to college, Loyola of Chicago, go Final Four basketball team. We did great this year. And all my friends were pre-med. I was the only pre-dent in the group. And they spent 4 years trying to talk me into medicine and almost went. Thought long and hard about it, but decided I really wanted to be a dentist. Went to Georgetown, went to dental school, and realized early on that I loved, I knew nothing about dentistry. Seven kids in my family. No one in my family was in science. Everyone is in business. So it was kind of an interesting thing for me because I had zero perspective. So I didn't know anything about it when I got there first day, didn't know anything about dentistry, even know how to pick up a handpiece or anything. And I questioned a lot of stuff. And I think that was a healthy thing for me because it led me to ask why we do stuff in dentistry. And one thing led to another. And I ended up doing a lot of research, clinical research in particular. We love evaluating products. It's something that we do on a regular basis in our practice. We're usually looking at anywhere from 6 to 12 at any given time. It can be as short as a single use, or we got a 15-year study going. So we've got lots of stuff across the board, but that was kind of what inspired me and kind of brings me fast forward to where we are today, is that that's been a cool part to incorporate into my practice. And because of it, I've had a chance to do some speaking also, which I enjoy. My mom says she can't believe I get paid to talk because she always said she'd pay me to shut up. So
that's so funny. Now I have so many stories. Like I'm going to tell a lot of stories. Like I was in your office one day and you guys got to listen. He like the practice is crazy busy, like crazy. At 4 o'clock, he looks at me, he goes, let's go. Come on. And then Wanda says, go. And so you didn't have any shoes on. You get in this black, you and I get in this black, convertible. We're driving around, beautiful day. I'm like, that place is still humming back there. Like he's like, and I've always found you're always present wherever you're at. You also do some crazy cool things. So when I was fat and growing my family and just eating a lot, I went and watched, this is the guy, folks. So like I went and watched one of my heroes, who's Brian. He was doing this thing called Iron Man. I told my wife, who was pregnant at the time, I go, honey, we're going to go watch this race from a dentist that I know. I love this guy. And she's like, oh, okay, what is it? I go, it's an Iron Man. She's like, that's the thing where all these people pass. I'm like, yeah, it is. And so my wife is pregnant right next to me. And then I surprised you the day of the race. And I was so emotionally overcome watching you do that race. And I said to her, I said, I got to try this. And she's like, these are real athletes. You could die doing this. I was like, oh. And that was 2003. I did it the next year. Then you talked me into doing Ironman Canada in Penticton. And then you met me up there, Saren up there. So you and I have been on this journey and you took me down some wild paths, but I am so crazy grateful. Now, I want to back up. Let's talk about the topic because you and I know this is one of our favorite topics is time. Why is time so important? Because you're in a fun place in your career. As you look back, how important is the word time?
I think time is pretty much everything nowadays. It's the new currency. And you know, when you were talking about a topic and we decided on it, you said time is the new rich. I think that's true. But not rich like money. It's like rich like happiness. It's a matter of kind of utilizing it to the best of your ability. And probably the biggest thing is being present. It's a tough thing for all of us to do, you know, with the advent of the smartphone and everything, all the different things that tug at us, to be able to just stay present. And it's a really, really hard thing for me in particular, mostly because I like to try and get 26 hours in a 24-hour day. So I found that in particular in our practice, you know, one thing I could do is utilize that time as best as possible in the long version for like treatment plans. And we talked a little bit about this in the past, just where I look at in particular doing overlap. And I should back up a second because one of the things that we do in our practice, it's a cosmetic restorative practice, and we're fee for service. It was a difficult step for anyone who's out there and thinking about it. We did it in 1989, so it's a long time ago. But I never looked back. Things changed. It was a challenge. It's hard to get away from the insurance, but it was the best thing we ever did by far, personally. Everyone's kind of different in that regard. But with that in mind, if you're going to have that type of practice, it's fee for service. You've got to deliver. You have to deliver a bunch of things. You have to deliver excellent dentistry. You have to deliver consistency, and you have to respect people's time. So being able to take a treatment plan, we talk about the long view again, being able to take someone's treatment plan and turn it from a 2.5-year treatment plan into a 14-month treatment plan makes all the difference in the world. And to do that, you have to, again, we talked about how we'd like to overlap procedures. We'll stack those things up. But it also comes all the way down to the short time, respecting the patient, getting them back. We don't like to think of our that space where the front desk is as a waiting room or even a reception area. We don't want them to sit down. We have, a beautiful reception area. And oftentimes they'll do sit down and get a cup of coffee or something. But we want to be able to get them back, respect their time, and get them out on time. And it's a juggling act. It's a challenge. Especially if you're trying to incorporate a lot of newer things into your practice and stay on the cutting edge. But that's, I think, probably the best part about time being that new rich, time being the currency of happiness, is that once you manage that and can balance it, it makes things great.
Yeah, well, and I'll just, because you get these questions too. You see young dentists and they go, "But Brian, I don't have any time. Like, I'm not even sleeping. My practice is running me. Where do I start?" Like, you sound like you've achieved a lot. Because I do want to get into the treatment aspects of this, because how you think is powerful. We're not talking about compromising quality. We're just talking about thinking differently. But let's start with the big thing. A young 32-year-old dentist watching this who's got little kids. Brian, where do I start?
Oh, well, first, I think the best place to start is to get your life organized. And I'm gonna jump back to you know, probably one of the cornerstones of the foundation of organization, and that's Stephen Covey. Which I'm sure, Kirk, you've talked about it a number of times in the past and how that's so important. But you got to put, you got your bucket and you're going to fill your bucket up. And you put your big rocks in first, then you put your small rocks, then your pebbles, then your sand, and finally your water, right? So What are the big rocks? You know, what are the things that really matter in your life? What are the most important things? Oftentimes, if you stop and take a step back and ask yourself those questions, you'll find out it's not the things that you think it is. To me, my family is one of the most important things. That's the biggest blessing that's ever happened to me. Not just my wife, who's my best friend, my three kids, who I absolutely love and am so proud of, but my parents, my brothers and sisters, my extended family, all the way to my practice family, my team. We call each other by the first name in the office. We don't use the doctor term. It's everyone's different. And we do it because out of respect, you know, that's how we feel. It's part of our family. So that's a rock. That's a big rock. Mm-hmm. It's a boulder that's got to go in there. And managing that's going to be the first thing. And then you got to put in the other parts, your hobbies, working on your profession, your spirituality, whatever that may be. And then, of course, money. You know, you got to pay for this stuff. So You want to be able to put all those things in. And I think deciding what they are early on is going to make a difference. Probably if I could share one other thing that's, I think, really important, it's location. You want to be where you're going to be happy, you know. Mm-hmm. And if you're not happy where you're at, and it's a location thing, move. Because One of the greatest things about your practice is you put all your tools in your bag and go someplace and practice someplace else, so you're going to be happy. So find a place.
Now, shed some light on that, too, because you did go through a journey. You were in a practice in a town that's a great little town, but it wasn't for you. And, you know, some dentists feel trapped. Or there's other experts out there that say, go to the town where you can crush it in the middle of nowhere. And I'm like, no, go where you want to be. You've done this. speak to it. So if I'm a dentist, like Brian, easy for you to say, but I'm in a town I don't want to be in. What would you say to that?
It's a great, great thing. I guess just to fill that in a little bit. When I graduated from dental school, I practiced up in Connecticut as an associate. My wife and I got married. We moved back to DC with no plans. Got an apartment. We found a practice. She's a dentist, my wife, and found a practice for her in Arlington, Virginia. We got a condo there, rented a condo, and we looked around, found something for me, and it was in a little town, La Plata, which was about 45 miles south of DC. And I made the commute every day down to La Plata. It's a small farm town, kind of rural outside DC. It's tobacco country and watermen and businesses. It's grown a lot since I was there. But I loved it. I loved the people. I loved the practice. The only thing I didn't love was the commute. I didn't love the what started out as a 45-minute drive in the morning if I got up early into an hour and 20 minutes. And it just got so long. And the coming back was even worse. It just got to be so long that I realized that wasn't contributing to my happiness. I loved the practice and the people. I worked hard to take what was a welfare practice. It was just a total welfare practice and turned it into a fee-for-service practice there. Attended the Pankey Institute, which helped out tremendously in that regard. Just gave me guidance. I can't even share how much guidance I got out of that. That was one of the things, was that a guy there named Rich Green said, hey, if that's not working and you're killing yourself to do that, why don't you see if you can recreate that closer to where you're going to live? Because at that point, we realized that my wife's a city girl and she really didn't want to live out in the country. So I decided to move up to DC. So after having started this practice and built it up to a really nice practice, I found a guy who liked that type of lifestyle, wanted it, and had him come in. And then I moved up to DC and started practicing with a good friend who'd been a friend for a long time, Gene Giannini, and we just kind of started off, as partners, and have been able to build a really nice practice together. And it's exactly 10K door to door. So I used to run it a lot, so I could 6.2 miles from my house to my office, which was perfect. Living in Arlington and commuting to downtown DC. So it's been great. Different type of practice. It's a more sophisticated crowd. People are a little bit different. The people in the rural area, I think, are a little more, I don't want to say true, homegrown. They're just homegrown people and great people. Just, I had wonderful, wonderful patients that I have friends that I'm still friends with today, here 20 years later. So moved up here about 20 years ago and have been practicing ever since in DC.
Yeah. And and back then your kids were little. So you had three kids, you still have three kids. And, so your kids were little. And so calculating the time back and forth, which, that was your everything. That was a big deal for you.
That was key. One of the things that, that I grew up with, and I assumed everyone did, was that my dad coached all my teams, played, a lot of sports as a kid, baseball, just the usual baseball, basketball, football stuff. And my dad coached the teams. And I just kind of assumed that that's what you did. So I kind of made a pledge to myself when my kids were babies that I was going to coach their teams. And if not as the head coach, as the assistant head coach or the guy who bought Gatorade or whatever, but inevitably these days, it turns out that you're going to be the head coach because no one else wants to be the head coach. Right. So I got to do that. And it was just getting to be difficult to be able to do that and cut days short down in La Plata, drive back so I could coach practices and the like. Moving up to DC made it great. It made it easy. Just able to spend, I think, a lot more time with the family and spend a lot more quality time being closer. I looked at it like saving 10 hours a week, not being on the road.
Yeah. And I love that. And Brian, I think you run into this too, where you talk to young dentists. Some of them are working evenings till 7 p.m. They're working on all day Saturdays and Sundays. And they're taking advice from dentists that have never worked Saturdays and Sundays. They say, you should work Saturdays and Sundays, but I've never worked Saturdays and Sundays. And they're building the practices only because they know it works. But you know how this is. You create enough value for patients. They will come in the hours that you work, and you can design hours that fit your life so that you can get what you originally, it's not about money. It's about getting what you really wanted when you first got into this profession. Is that correct?
That you hit it on the head. It's, that's, I think, a bigger leap of faith than the insurance leap of faith. Going insurance free takes a lot. You're going to take a hit on patients. It tends to be the patients that you don't want anyway. But the bigger thing is getting command of your personal schedule, not your office schedule, but how you want to be and when you want to be in the office, when you want to be there, and creating, I think, the right environment for that. Because if you have that environment, patients are going to want to come. They're going to say, yeah, I can do that. He respects my time, or she respects my time. I know when I get in there, they're going to see me and they're going to get things taken care of. They've done planning. A lot of it generally, so that we can have it all set. It's, again, one of the things that you had taught us. We have done a morning huddle for years, but a while back we added admin time in during the day. We have an hour for lunch, and after lunch we have a half hour where we just do our planning as teams. All of us are kind of little teams to get everything done. Right. And we use that to serve our patients better. So with that, I'm able to then say, okay, yeah, we're cutting out at 4 o'clock. That's it. And you need to get in before that. That's our last appointment's at 3:30 or 3 o'clock or whatever it is. So
yeah. And two things I want to brag about you is, number one, I had never seen a dentist do things as it was happening. Like, there were so many times that I'd watch you and you'd be like, nope, doing it right now. Let's get it done. Like, you would leave with files closed, which I thought was awesome, because a lot of dentists would put stuff in their bag and say, I'll do this at night. You're like, nope, doing it right now. And you would get it done and move on to the next thing. And somehow you still stayed on time. And then the second thing, I'm going to share your secret online here, because I was looking at your computer one day and I'm like, oh my gosh, you have no email. And you're like, yeah, I don't. I'm like, how can you have no email in your inbox? And you go, I have a secret. Can you share that? It's not so much a secret, because I've told everybody, but you're a big fan of simplification. So can you shed some light on the whole, like, how to make your life simple? Just add, I don't want to tell your secrets.
I don't know if it's much of a secret, but it's funny that you even mentioned that. My partner and I are very similar in that we can't stand clutter. And one thing I can't stand is clutter in my inbox. It's got to be less than a page. It's got to be a single screen. Everything's got to get out and get dumped to a bucket. I don't want to see stuff that's useless, so that all gets blocked. But I think you're probably referring to the thing I do that marketers can't stand, is that every few years, and I'm getting ready to do it, it's going to happen in a few months, I change my email address, and not by a lot, usually by, I'll drop an initial or something like that. And it's amazing because you don't realize how much clutter is coming in there that you think is important. That's not. Right. And you're going to be, oh, geez, well, what about those people? They got to reach me, man. They're going to reach you. If they need to find you, they're going to find you. And they might be a little angry. Probably not. The ones who know are going to be like, hey, Brian, you change your email address, or I will send it out, as we've done in the past. We send out a little list to just our close friends saying, hey, change an email address, drop it, put this one in now, or start September 1st or whatever it might be. But by doing that, all this stuff goes away. I mean, stuff that you think you might be important, then you open it up and it's, I don't know, it's something from Boats US, or it's some real estate thing, or so, I don't know. It looks interesting, but you got sucked in, and you got sucked in for a minute, just 1 minute. But you multiply that times 10 others, and all of a sudden, 1/6 of your hour is gone on useless stuff, which we get bombarded with. So, that's my little thing, is I do that, and it works well. I can show you my inbox right now. I know there's three emails in it. That's it.
So. I love it. I love it. Now we got a viewer chimed in. Deepak, he's a great, one of our great viewers here. Great question. When I think of how many dentists use their precious time so poorly, this quote by Scott Peck says a lot to me. Until you value yourself, you won't value your time. Until you value your time, you will not do anything with it. What are your thoughts?
Oh, that's fantastic. And I think we all live by or want to live by that and struggle because we tried, I think many of us try to get too much stuff in. And when we do that, we're not valuing our time and we're not valuing the time of the people around us, our loved ones, our patients. So you sometimes have to back up and that's a big rock. You know, that rock has to go in there. It takes serious changes in your habits to be able to, I think, to be able to live that way. But I completely, I agree completely. I think that that's the truth and strive every day to it. And part of it is to be organized. So,
Yeah, and I love this. Now, you're a great instructor. You're a great teacher, influencer in dentistry. And I want you to talk about the time element even in treatment planning because about stacking treatment. And I'm just going to say this, folks. I've seen his dentistry. It's gorgeous. He always does the right thing. But you've taken traditional thinking in dentistry where a dentist might be, well, this is 24 months. And you're like, no, you're thinking about it wrong. You know, I want you to talk about how you cut treatment time in half, you know, without compromising quality at all. And just some of the things, even with minor tooth movement, the things that you teach about it, can you shed some light on how you translate this into treatment with your patients?
Yeah, love to. It kind of comes back to that time, the big rock in the bucket. To me, patient's time is just so valuable. And what I realized, we first started doing minor tooth movement about 20 years ago, and it's, I think, a routine part of dentistry now. It's accepted, it's proven, it's standardized. If you follow the rules, it works. And that's the key. You got to follow the rules. Every tooth will move. I'm going to just talk about tooth movement for a second. Every tooth will move or it won't move because of one of four things: not enough force, not enough space, not enough science, or not enough compliance. And force and space are obvious. Science means that some things we haven't figured out yet. We just need to know what those are and manage that. And then compliance is whether or not your patient's compliant. If it's clear aligners, that's the one of the toughest things. If it's brackets, which it can be, that also can be challenging. But I realized when I started to do this myself, because previous to that, the way that we did comprehensive dentistry is that we worked with our team, and I have an awesome team. I've got awesome endodontist, Peruzzi's, Kirk and I have talked about. Same thing with oral surgeon, orthodontists, periodontists that we work with very, very closely. But for the minor tooth movement, the stuff that I'm going to keep in my office, that was a big change in dentistry. And again, started about 20 years ago. When we first started dabbling with this, we had to figure out how to manage it, because it used to be that we would take the patient, send them off for ortho, then we'd try and fit pieces in while they were in ortho. They'd kind of get lost. Well, now that happens in our office. So we can manage that. And I realized kind of early on that the way we manage that is by, again, looking at that time thing. So what is the procedure that takes the most amount of time? Well, it's going to be the tooth movement probably. What's the next longest procedure? Probably perio. Next would be implant placement. Then, you know, you're going to have maybe extractions or something in there, down to your restorative, down to your immediate caries control, you know, kind of all the way back. And this was something that I learned from a guy in Austin who taught about strategic planning early on, Bob Frazier, who many of you are familiar with, changed my life when he taught me about strategic planning. And it's just to make it simple, because it seems like it's this really weird, complex thing. It's not. All you do is take where you're at and go to the end. What is the end product? And for me, it's always the same. It's really simple. It's a beautiful, healthy, functional smile. That's it. That's what I want. And then I work backwards to where I am today, all the way back to the consult. I put in the big chunks, put in the big rocks, and I put in the smaller stuff, and then I just slot in contingencies. Then I take that stuff and I say, okay, well, where can I reduce time? again, not compromising treatment at all. I love sharing my cases, including my mistakes. But I love sharing the stuff and saying, hey, I was able to save time because I started this part of the procedure earlier. Even if it means, let me just jump in and start with the tooth movement. I know the basics of what I want to accomplish. Let me get started with that. I can redirect it 3 months into it. I need to at least unload that bicuspid. I need to do this or that, whatever it might be. And then I can, while I'm doing that, I can jump into the other parts. We talked a little bit about how, you know, nowadays I have comfort and confidence in predicting where my implants are going to be. I have no problems about doing that. I'm not going to drop an implant in before I do minor tooth movement, but I am certainly going to drop it in somewhere in the middle, because once I've got the teeth moving and I know what's going on and I know the predictability, which is very predictable, if you follow the rules, again, they're not tough to follow, but if you follow the rules, I can say, okay, I want to put that implant here because I know that the rest of the teeth are going to end up here. And now I've saved more time. I've taken the 3 months it's going to take to integrate that implant, loaded it in the middle of my aligner therapy. And with that going on, I typically will have, you know, a pontic built into the aligner. So it's like a flipper. They don't go a day without a tooth while we're doing this. Implants integrated. Aligners are done. We go ahead and get an impression at the, you know, a scan at the level of the fixture, take out the last aligner, put in a provisional tooth, you know, mold the tissue if it's in the anterior so we can get and put something that's beautiful, and then take it to final. And final for us is going to be all the way to not just getting it done and making it pretty. It's got to be perfect occlusion.
Right. Absolutely. Now, I want you to just clearly, you talk about stacking, and I love how you do this. If somebody hasn't been exposed to your philosophy, now, again, you're taking what you've just shared, but explain that. Like, for if I'm a young dentist watching this and I got a lot going on with a patient, how would I look at treatment planning that way to honor time?
Well, I start with strategic treatment planning. I would start with just saying, what is the end goal? You know, what do I want to accomplish? And having an honest conversation with the patient. I have no qualms about discussing finances with the patient, discussing treatment. It's, you know, the treatment itself is pretty much a physics issue. It's like you need it or you don't, right? It's, you can't game the system. You don't want to lie. I'm going to be super honest about everything. I'm going to tell them what they need. And I'll say, hey, one of the buckets, you want to talk about cosmetics? We can talk about cosmetics. All right. Here's the, you know, that aspect of it. It's going to cost this much. Well, where does that fit in, doc? Well, we build that into the overall treatment. So, first thing we do is decide what the end goal is. And we do that with the patient. So it's going to be part of a co-discovery, co-diagnosis. So we gather all our records, sit down with the patient, do a review, discuss with the patient the options that are available, pros and cons of all of them. And then once we've decided, then I build the treatment plan. Each and every treatment plan for me is custom. It's probably the bane of my existence. I spend a ton of time on treatment plans. And because I know once I've got that in place and I break it into phases, it'll be, and it says right in the top, it's, you know, after the introductory paragraphs, it says, this treatment plan is broken into phases for easy comprehension. And they can just carry that around like a roadmap and check the box. Okay, we've done with this. I see phase two and phase three are overlapping. I'm going to be getting two endos done while I'm doing the Invisalign. Perio's going on at the same time. We provisionalize two teeth over here, but just to carry us through till we get the bite stable. So we just stack all those things. And the way we do that is find out what the patient wants, go to the end, work back to where we are now.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome.
Does that explain it?
It does. What's everybody's fear in with this? So is it just too much traditional thinking? Is it you get kind of dogmatic about this too much in some respects?
Yeah, I think the two probably edges of fear, the two edges of that sword are dogmatic thinking, having trouble thinking outside the box or being afraid you'll be criticized. And the other one is sloppy, is doing sloppy dentistry. I abhor sloppy dentistry. I'll never criticize or comment treatment that I see because I've done it. I mean, we all have done it. If anyone says they haven't had, you know, a crown that had an open margin or filling that didn't work out the way they wanted to, they're not being honest with themselves. What they can do is say, yeah, that happened. I see it. It's wrong. I'm going to cut it off and do it over. And you know what? All it's going to cost you, Mr. Patient, is a little bit of time. It doesn't cost you any money, but I could put on something that I know will be better and more beautiful. What's my expense is a lab expense. You know, the end result is that patient tells three people who say, oh yeah, those veneers look great. Or man, I just love the way your smile turned out. You know, what'd you do? Oh, you just got a little bit of those plastic trays and some whitening, that Invisalign thing. That's amazing. You know, so building that rapport with patients, I think, comes from us spending time and getting to know them and not compromising on either of those two things, staying dogmatic or cutting corners.
Yeah.
I think that's probably the biggest thing.
Yeah, and this is the perfect topic for a Friday afternoon in the summertime, because I'm going to say this. Now, as you guys can see, if you're listening to this, how this man thinks, and it's a beautiful thing, because of all the people I've ever met, one of the things I borrow from you, or I try to, is you've never used the word, I'm too busy. Like one time I was in town and I was in a steakhouse and, you know, and you show up at a Clay Matthews. Now, we're both diehard Packer fans, right? You show up in the steakhouse with a Clay Matthews t-shirt on. You're like, yeah, like as busy, as much as was going on. I'm in a steakhouse on the other side of town. You show up and you're like, I'm not missing this. We're going to have a great dinner. We laughed our butts off for hours. I know you had patients the next day, or you had to get on a plane, but you never tell yourself or anybody else, I'm too busy for you. Like, you always make time. What's the secret to that?
Oh, I wish I had 26 hours in the day. It's management is the hardest thing in the world. But, you know, it's easy to see the rocks, right? All I had to do was to say to Deneen, my wife, I was like, hey, Kirk's over at the Crystal City Marriott. And she's like, all right, let's go have dinner. Because that's important to us. That's just an important thing. I think being able to spend time with people that you value is super important. We're only here for so long, you know. Right. It's going to be over before we know it. And to be able to live and enjoy every minute, I think, is super important.
Right. And does your, you know, you and I joke about this. We were together a couple weeks ago in Napa having a great time. And we joked that, you know, we could possibly be playing the back nine, but it's going to be a fun run. Now, if you're younger, does your perspective change if you know, I know you and I don't think morbidly like that, but like, is your perspective a little different now that you're in a mature phase of your career? Do you value it more? Do you value an hour more? You know, do you notice things a little bit more from your perspective in your career? What would you say about that?
Yeah, I definitely do. And I'm also kind of weak when it comes to being able to, you know, break off relationships or walk away from whatever it might be, including stuff like the simple like emails, right? Just the junk emails that don't need to be responded to. So the better way for me is to not be exposed to that, you know, to not have that put in front of me. And then to pick those things that are going to be important and that I value and focus on those, because, you know, that's where we want to be. I think that does come with being on the back nine. I know this shouldn't be a patting each other on the back thing, but that was at your ACT, the summit that you held out in Napa, and that was by far one of the highlights we've had in years. It was just a fantastic experience, not just the fellowship, but the learning, which was just really cool. Just got some really awesome nuggets and met some really cool people. You know, that was kind of one of the things, is I met some people that I could, you know, call up and say, hey, I got a patient who's going to be in Mission Viejo. You know, can you take care of my, they got a loose temp or something, whatever it might be. So it's great. I think that we look for that, and we look for those types of things, because it all comes back to the relationships. I think it's relationship dentistry. It's not transactional. If you're doing transactional dentistry, you know, you're going to get transactional stuff out of it. If you do relationship dentistry, that's what you do with your life, right? Your life is built on relationships. So yeah, that's I look at things a little differently nowadays. I think we all value our time. I'm coming up. I'm getting close to 60, which I can't imagine. It's just hard to even think of that, because there's so many other, you know, mountains I want to climb and you know, things that I want to do. And probably one of them is just spend time with people. My wife in particular, one of the things that our kids are at a point now where the last one is a senior in college, and you know, they're going to be kind of out of the nest, hopefully. And one of the things that we've done that we did before we had kids is start traveling again, just, you know, throwing a dart and, you know, picking a place on a map that looks good. She wanted to go to Morocco. We went to Morocco. I was like, well, if we go to Morocco, man, we got to ride camels out in the desert. So, you know, because that's one of those things you want to do. Mm-hmm. And then we got to climb a high sand dune so we could watch the sunrise over the Sahara. And she wasn't big on that part, but she was really big on the restaurants in Casablanca and Marrakesh. So, so yeah, we love traveling together. And I think that comes back to that relationship thing with whoever that person is. You know, your friend, your spouse, your kids, your parents, your brothers and sisters, the people you work with. So, yeah, it's all important.
It's awesome. So if narrow it down, if you were going to give advice to a younger dentist today, just what would you say, like your top three things? You'd say, hey, look, I know you got 20, 30 years in front of you, but do these three things.
Thanks. Wow. That's I hadn't thought about that. That's a great question. I the first thing I would do is make sure I'm in a place where I'm happy, physically and emotionally. Both of them are, I think, easy to sort out. I think it's always a challenge for us. My example was when I was practicing in La Plata, you know, physically I was not in the right place. It was just too far. And when I was talking with Rich Green about it, I was like, you know, I know what I need to do. I need to practice up in DC, but I feel like I want to be driving a Donzi, a little speedboat. And what I have is an aircraft carrier. I can't turn like that. I got to do that. Right. And knowing that you've got that goal set and where you want to be again, both emotionally and physically, is great. You know, a goal is nothing but a dream with a deadline. So I just say, okay, in 2 years, I'm going to be there. You know, I'm going to make sure that happens in 2 years. I'm not happy with the type of dentistry I'm practicing. Picking just another one, kind of more an emotional one. I really love doing sleep dentistry. I think that's a really cool, neat area. Mm-hmm. You know, in 2 years, I want to get my fellowship in the academy or cosmetic is another example. You know, whatever that might be, all the way down to your personal relationships at home. You know, what can you do to make those stronger and better? What can you do to make those stronger and better? Not just in your home, but in your neighborhood, in your practice, in your community. You know, ideally try and, you know, make this place, I think, a better place than when we came in. So first one's going to be location. Second one, if I could pick one, would be to understand, develop your philosophy. It's something that is going to change and grow with you as time goes by. In particular, you know, for me, you know, I'm a CE hound. I love CE, love taking CE and learning. I love the way things are changing in dentistry. It's just a lot of help with your practice, you know, to help, I think, set those things in order, because that helps you develop your philosophy. It helps make it a solid core for you so that in the future, you know, you're able to say, yeah, I've accomplished this. I've done what I want. Third thing is easy. I'm going to run it back to how we started. I'm going to say time. You know, if I could suggest one thing to the new young dentist is look at your time and just manage your time, you know. Figure out those things that are important to you, whatever it might be. If it's hiking or bike riding or sailing or crocheting or, you know, going to wine club or book club, I don't care. All those are great. You know, I mean, video gaming, whatever it might be. But, you know, look at those things and say, okay, that's my time. I'm going to spend my time doing that. And I'm going to keep that balanced. And then the next question is, well, how do you keep it balanced? And I'm going to kind of jump back to you know, the old ancient Greek thing. We're going to talk a little bit about the cross. You know, it's great if you've ever seen it. There's a wonderful cross that's a cross of life, we call it, and it's work, play, love, and worship. And you want to try and keep all four of those things balanced. You get too much work, your cross tilts down and the other stuff gets out of whack, right? You're working too much and not spending time at home with your family, growing spiritually, too much play, same thing happens, right? Mm-hmm. So keeping those things in balance, I think, becomes key, and managing your time helps you to get there.
Buddy, you're the best, man. I am so grateful you carve out some time for me. And I know you always have something fun planned every single weekend. Actually, you always got something fun. And I it just came to me. You invited me to climb Kilimanjaro that year. And the year that you did it, we got pregnant and we had our boy. So that was the excuse I had. You're like, oh, okay, I'll give you a pass for this one. And then you sent me a picture from being on top of Mount Kilimanjaro. And I'm like, darn it, there he is again. So I'm telling you guys, this is a man who, if life was a sponge, he's going to squeeze it for everything it was worth and just enjoy the entire journey. So, brother, I'm so grateful to call you my friend, my hero, my mentor. I'm just, thank you for carving out some time. So, brother, we're going to do many of these, and I'm so grateful, man.
It's an honor, Kirk. It's wonderful to see how much you've contributed to dentistry too, man. It's awesome. Thank you. I'd like to thank Ben, who's your backbone right now, helping keep all the audio together for us. But you put together a great team, and you've really helped to move the needle in dentistry. So I appreciate it. Thank you.
Thanks, brother. I appreciate that. And I want to thank you guys for watching. Brian, stick around for a second while we say goodbye to everybody else. But thank you guys for watching. If you enjoyed today, which I know you did, just do us a favor. Hit the share button. Share this with your friends. Keep sending us suggestions you want to see, things that you'd love to see from Brian. I'll have him back. We'll ask him some great questions. And until we see you next time, hope you guys have a great weekend. Keep watching the Best Practice Show. You guys take care.